Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, I'm Mariano Florentino Cuellar of the California Supreme Court. It is my great pleasure to welcome you to our second meeting of the Language Access Implementation Task Force, the first in-person meeting. And we have much to do, and I sense much enthusiasm in the room. We are going to go through some logistics first, and I will try to speak as slowly as I can because I am being interpreted by an American Sign Language interpreter, which I'm very happy to report is present. Our primary task today is to listen and to do our best to use our time wisely. We have a lot of work to do, but as I said, I sense the energy in the room, and we will record the session. This open session is part of what will allow us to keep a record of the work of the task force. We ask that our members remember to introduce themselves before they make remarks so everyone who may be listening knows who's talking. Over the course of our meeting today, I will have occasion to talk to you and to work with you on the very difficult challenges we will face in this process. But I want to start by talking about some of the advantages that we enjoy. Number one, we have a beautiful room in which we're meeting. This is a facility that is not only practically useful and helpful, but it's also symbolic. We are meeting in the same room that the Judicial Council meets in, which underscores the support of the Judicial Council for this process. Number two, the Golden State Warriors just won the championship. I will tell you that I thought about inviting them to join us today. I felt like that might get us off to the right start. They didn't return my phone calls. Number three, we have the support of somebody that's very well known to you and that has agreed to be present today to make sure that we start the right way. And, of course, this is somebody who needs no introduction, my colleague, the Chief Justice of California. Now, although she needs no introduction, I'm still going to provide one. Justice Rivera, Judge Covarrubias, Judge Austin, and all the members of the Joint Working Group, many of whom are still here, you have worked very hard to get us to this point, and much of what we will do in the next few months and years together reflects the sweat equity, the effort, the determination, also the effort of our terrific staff who are in this room. But I also want to emphasize how much I appreciate what the Chief Justice has done to get us to this point. She has been tireless in her dedication to access to justice, to language access, and to making language access a priority for California. I want to recognize her for that effort. I want to recognize her for her vision for Access 3D, which calls for access to justice to be physical, remote, and equal. All of those themes will be important in our work on language access. I appreciate how welcome she's made me feel on a personal note, and how patient she's been as I learned how the California Supreme Court works. And I'm honored that she selected me as chair of this task force so that I could work with you. And I am grateful not only to her, but to Judge Covarrubias for being kind enough to shore this effort up and to join me in leading this effort. Please welcome the Chief Justice of California, Tani Cantil Sacaway.
Thank you, Justice Cuellar. And I'll have more to say about my excitement and your leadership of this group in a few moments. But as I was coming over here, I was thinking about California and our great promise and what makes us great and what sets us apart from the rest of really the United States and the world. And it is our diversity and it is our strength. But language actually bonds us. Language is really the gateway to all the promises that our great democracy holds. Language understanding, access, flexibility, that's really the promise. That is the delivery method for which all of our ideals are passed on to people who come to our courts and in our capital and who work in our states under the protection of our laws. So the action we take today in having this first in-person meeting to me is exciting, and we do great things today. And I want to take a step back and remember when this issue first crossed my desk. And that was a few years ago with input from Justice Rivera, Justice Lamdin, and others. And at the time that we were talking about it, it just seemed to me that this is something that California, in all of its strength and talents, as evidenced by those of you around this table with all of your vast experience and your commitment and your hope for a future, that we should get ahead of this issue. We should not be behind. We should take a leadership role in crafting a plan and a roadmap going forward. And so with the great talent in California's judiciary and legal community and in its courts with staff and stakeholders, I was really grateful to be able to tap Justice Rivera and Judge Covarrubias to lead what was really a historic task force, a historic plan. And I say that because in my travails over the last several years, I had the opportunity to go to USDOJ and speak at that time with Tony West and the Civil Department regarding their interest in California's language access issues and plans. And thereafter, they came out, as you know, to the plan and attended regularly and made an effort to really find out and to show others around the country what California was doing. And the compliments that I received from USDOJ and other members was just how cohesive and future-looking the California Language Access Plan Committee was. Many of you served on that committee, and the leadership by Justice Rivera and Judge Covarrubias was really exemplary and symbolic of how we should always continue to try to bring about our efforts and our big projects. And many of you here, and I hate to name all of you because I will forget names and then I'll feel bad about that, but so many of you, the judges, the justices, the language interpreters, staff across this table, assisted in that. So it was not only this comprehensive language access plan that was amazing, it was the work you did together and how you did it. The process was lauded everywhere. You know how rare that is for me to hear? Procedural fairness was something that this California Language Access Plan Committee, this commission, worked on and I think trumpeted. So imagine now the report comes to council in January. We're excited to receive it. And at the same time, Justice Mariano Florentino Cuellar is joining the California Supreme Court. It was like the celestial heavens aligned. I have here a leader, well-spoken, bright, collegial, experienced, diplomatic, and impassioned. And there could not have been a greater sign that we, California, are on the right track when I found that Justice Cuellar was here and excited to lead the implementation task force. So I'm not going to take up a lot of your time. I want to say that I look forward to your work. I'm excited by what you do. And I know this is the right step for California, and I thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedules to be here to craft this, which will, in my view, bond 38 million Californians and really go to great lengths to truly ensure meaningful access to justice. So thank you very much. Best wishes, and I look forward to being updated and informed on all that you do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chief. I think you'll agree she's much better than the Warriors. Let me wrap up our introduction with just a few more comments to frame the challenge before us. And I know this is not going to be much of a surprise to you, but just to underscore what we have in common as we approach this problem. We know, because we see it every day, that people come to court for all kinds of reasons, but fundamentally because they have a problem that they need to solve, whether it's custody of their children, a landlord-tenant dispute, or protecting themselves from harm. And our justice system is supposed to provide a forum where people can get answers, where they can protect themselves, and where they can resolve disputes fairly. The people I'm talking about are all the people of our state. And we're talking about people who come from different countries, grew up in households where their primary language was not English, where maybe they were using American Sign Language since they were kids. Indeed, the limited English proficient population in California has grown at a staggering rate, 56% growth between 1990 and 2010, and it'll grow even larger in the next 5 years. The statistic that I use sometimes that really turns heads when I travel outside the state and talk about the work we're going to do together is this one. Add up the population that is limited English proficient in Texas, in Florida, and in New York, and you get about the same number that we're dealing with here in California. That's why language access is and has to remain a key component of access to justice. The strategic plan for language access in the California courts was meant to do something about that, to try to develop a consistent statewide approach to ensure language access was a reality across California and across our 58 counties. The vision is that language access will become part of court services, and at the core of court services, that it'll be viewed as essential. The California courts, however, are not in a place that is uncomplicated. Instead, we're dealing with this at a time when we're facing a severe budget challenge, and that continues. We face cuts that total more than $1 billion over the past several years. That's the backdrop against which we do this work. We have to find ways to move forward to make language access a reality while we also are mindful of those challenges. In performing our work, our task force will recognize that resources, therefore, are crucial, but that they're also scarce, and that additional funding will take stages to secure. For example, funding for full expansion of interpreter services in all civil cases and for all court-ordered, court-operated events, or for providing signage or translation for more court forms in multiple languages, that can't be achieved overnight. But we also want to make sure that we maintain funding for other court services and we find the funding that we need to reach the goals that this task force is about. Our courts are currently providing a range of language access services. We want to recognize that work. We want to build on that good work. And I want to stress that we will need to be flexible at times, to ask for your patience, and we'll need to work closely, collaboratively with judges, court staff, interpreters, legal services providers, and our limited English communities to help us turn the 75 recommendations in this strategic access plan into reality. That's the tone that I want us to set, and I know that we have the right people in the room to make this work. With the introduction now concluded, I'm going to take the role. Actually, I'm going to let Doug Denton take the role.
Thank you, Justice Cuellar. And because we have 26 members, it's actually easier to identify who couldn't be here today. Tracy Clark, Yvette Pena, and Judge Coughlin all had prearranged vacations, so they couldn't join us, but we wish them well on their vacations. And then I'm just going to call people who were missing when we sat down, and if you're here, just please let me know. Naomi Adelson?
Here.
Thank you. Kevin Baker? Janet Hudak? Joanne Lee? Justice Marquez?
Here.
Thank you, Justice Marquez. And Leah Wilson? All right, all other members are here.
Okay.
At this point, I think our next item of business is to approve our minutes from the April 29th meeting. We sent the draft minutes to all members on June 10th. I hope everyone has had the opportunity to review the minutes. Are there any corrections to the minutes that were submitted by staff? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
And seconded. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing no opposition, the minutes are deemed approved. Would also indicate to those that wish to make public comment, our public comment sheet for sign-up sheet was located in the lobby, and also if you wish to provide any public comments at that portion, we ask that you sign up. We had scheduled a public comment to begin at by 11:20. We're a bit behind schedule. But we will proceed again with the public comment period after a brief overview. We will call your names in the order that is listed. And again, if you wish to sign up and haven't done so already, there is a sign-up sheet that we ask you to do so. Before I turn the meeting back over to Justice Cuellar, I just want to commend him for his leadership at this point in time. There was an article, I do not know if some of you have seen it, in the Daily Journal. And to see the article and to see Justice Cuellar as our leader, it just brought a renewed energy to the work that we have been on creating a language access plan. And his tireless leadership and his energy, it just is infuses and it just passes on to everyone. So I thank Justice Cuellar for his confidence to ask me to be his co-chair. Justice Cuellar.
Thank you very much, Judge Covarrubias, and thank you again to all of you for being a part of this. We want to do in the next phase of this just very briefly a discussion of the logistics and organization of the task force. This will not take long, but we thought it would be good to essentially pick up exactly where we left off in the conference call and flesh out a bit how the task force is going to be organized, how the subcommittees are going to work, a little bit about the representation process that we've tried to go through to make sure we hear from different kinds of voices. So, as you'll recall, the purpose before us is in many ways very specific. It's not an easy purpose to achieve, but it's one that is quite specific. And it's really to advise the Judicial Council, the Chief Justice, regarding how we implement the recommendations contained in the strategic plan that we have right here. And to help get things done to make that plan a reality. We'll work with staff as we go to do all the things we need to do to make that a reality and to inform the deliberations of this task force. A lot of what that will require, technically speaking, is going to be estimates of cost, to be honest. How are we going to use resources as wisely as possible to achieve as much of this plan as early as possible? And in terms of getting things done, to be honest, our most important focus today will be for our subcommittees to develop concrete steps to implement the phase one recommendations of the language access plan. So all the things we'll do today are important, but I would say really the centerpiece is this idea of the subcommittees doing the breakout sessions, working hard to identify which of those phase one priorities they want to put at the top of their list so we can start getting a running start on those. To accomplish that task, what we've done is we've assigned all 47 of those phase one recommendations to different subcommittees to review. And to remind you, there are four subcommittees. We have one that will deal in the main with budget-related issues and with trying to monitor and gather information collaboratively with our counties so that we know how well everything is actually working on the ground and we can help where something is not working effectively. That'll be chaired by Judge Steve Austin, I'm grateful, who also, as you know, is chair of the Court Interpreters Advisory Panel and brings that experience to the task. And he, of course, was instrumental in developing the language access plan. Part and parcel of getting this done will also be using technology wisely but carefully. And that will be the purview of our Technological Solutions Subcommittee. And there we will benefit from the experience of Justice Terry Berniers, who, as you know, also chairs the Court Technology Advisory Committee, CTAC. Another key component will be handled by the third subcommittee on translation, signage, and tools for courts. This will be co-chaired by Justice Lori Zalon and by Jose Varela. Both of them were members of the joint working group that developed the language access plan. And their work, of course, will be crucial because so much of what we need to deal with will happen not in the context of actual court proceedings, but in the hallways, in the entrance, in a court clerk's office. Last but very important is our subcommittee on language access education and standards. And I'm grateful to Judge Janet Gard and to Ana Maria Garcia for co-chairing this very crucial subcommittee and for helping to lead our efforts to figure out what appropriate training and standards for language access will ensure that LEP court users have full and meaningful access to our courts. Let me also add that the Court Interpreters Advisory Panel is crucial, and we benefit from the fact that it has long been a part of the structure of our system, and so CIAP will also be assigned some of the LAP recommendations that relate to court interpreter issues, and it will help that Judge Steve Austin will be in this crucial role in our task force. You're going to hear more about the subcommittees afterwards, but for the moment, I just wanted to lay that out there and then add one last piece of this, which will round out our discussion of logistics and organization. And that's representation on the task force. If you look around the room, you'll see we tried to put in a lot of effort to find the right people to be in this room. So we've got representatives from key stakeholders in the provision of language access services, including but not limited to judicial officers, court administrators, court interpreters, legal service providers, and community leaders. We have three court interpreters, for example, among our task force members, along with a court interpreter manager, who is also a court-certified ASL interpreter, for a total of four court interpreters. But one of the subcommittee tasks that you can start talking about today in the breakout sessions is how to integrate individuals with special expertise who can even go beyond the membership of this task force to help the subcommittees in achieving their goals. So we will go about, in consultation with the co-chairs of the subcommittees, identifying translators, interpreters, and others who can supplement the experience that's already in the room. We also expect to be working closely with stakeholder groups to ensure that our community meetings are actually forums where people know about stuff, they come to participate, they get advance notice, and we can hear their suggestions for best practices and successful implementation. We're also going to be working closely with CIAP, as I said, and its interpreter members, so we'll have the benefit of interpreters that are on CIAP in the implementation process. And if you look at that whole picture together, I think what you see is an effort to try to make sure that we leverage the expertise on this task force, but we don't make the conversation purely bounded by who's on the task force. At this point, let me just pause for a moment to see if anybody has any questions. Okay. Seeing none, I will turn it back over to Judge Covarrubias.
At this time, we will begin the public comment portion of our meeting. We will call the names in order that's listed. Do we have the?
No one signed up for public comment. And I just wanted to let people know that Leah Wilson, correct, joined us. Welcome, Leah. I don't have my glasses, but I think I can see you.
Welcome. Okay, so suddenly we've gone from being a little behind schedule to being a little ahead of schedule. It's amazing how that works. Okay, so our next item is to give you an update on the budget, which is, if you're on the task force and that's not on your mind, I'd be very surprised, certainly on our minds. And what we're going to do is we're just going to give you a sense of what the state of play is just in the here and now. This has benefited tremendously from two things that have come together just in the last few weeks. One is that first task force conference call we had where we talked about the issue. I explained that time was short to actually get in an initial request for 2016-2017, and without in any way prejudicing all the work and consultation we needed to do to flesh out phase two and phase three of this whole implementation process, we still needed to start moving forward quickly, and I was so pleased that we got a unanimous recognition of that on the call and support for some of the priorities we wanted to start getting out there. The other has been a lot of work from staff with us to start putting together all the technical details behind that. So on April 29th, 2015, we held that first conference call, and the four concepts that we discussed on that call for BCP are now under the auspices of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, TCBAC. If I'd been in the system longer, I'd know if there was a shorthand, quick way of pronouncing that, but if there isn't, I'll just call it TCBAC. And a couple weeks later, in mid-May, what we did is we had our August vice chair, Judge Covarrubias, and then Donna Hershkowitz from the Judicial Council staff present to the Judicial Council, sorry, to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee about these priorities that we talked about in the conference call. And what we emphasized were these four priorities. You'll recall, interpreter services in civil matters, so making even more progress in using that opening that we have under AB 1657 to expand interpreters in civil proceedings, training and signage through a grant program for trial courts, so trial courts can apply for grants that can start getting this stuff funded more quickly, an on-site trial court support process for language access, and a pilot so that we can do all we need to do to get video remote interpreting right. And, you know, there are a few other things that are implicit and included in all this. During the conference call, you'll recall we talked about also funding some outreach, and all that is in the mix as well. But the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee heard this, and we backed it up with a request that tried to express our recognition that we actually needed a good bit of money to do this. So we provided a range to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, which goes from roughly a high of about $20 million, high of, you know, to be more precise, $19.69 million, and then a low, which is a little bit over $7.5 million. Obviously, we'd like to get as close as possible to the higher amount, if at all possible. And on May 18th, the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, we were gratified to say, approved the requested BCP concepts, and will now move forward in the Judicial Council with presenting them. We're going to be working closely with Judicial Council staff from here on out on this stuff, and the hope is that this is going to help us get a running start on things like funding translation of Judicial Council forms, creation of multilingual videos to assist LEP court users, obviously the work of the task force itself, and we'll also be working closely with staff to assign costs to all the recommendations of the language access plan, even beyond what this initial request entailed. To be honest, one of the key things that will have to happen after today's meeting will be lining up the input we start getting from the subcommittees today about priorities with the work of the staff to assign numbers and costs to things. It won't be a surprise to you to know that we're learning in part as we go, that some of this has not been done before, and so it requires some innovation, some careful thinking. Part of that process has been to develop or start development of a cost model that will give us a better sense of how this will play out in the 58 trial courts so that we know just exactly how much we need to make this plan a reality. We're also going to work to put in our best projections of anticipated need then into the sort of second phase of this, in addition to whatever we request in the first phase. We do want to recognize that a lot of courts, including the Los Angeles Superior Court, which is not a small court, they have already taken some steps to expand interpreter services in civil matters, and pretty much every day I hear of more courts that are doing that. In fact, I hear from you all. I know that that's an encouraging sign, because that means that a lot of courts are already at work trying to figure out how they can take current resources and to use them to expand services. But it doesn't take away the responsibility we have to find additional resources. Let me pause there and see if people have any questions. Okay. So let me just add one small thing. We did not have any oral public comment. We have received some written public comments, and our staff will work to make sure that those are shared with all of you. Okay?
And also Kevin Baker joined us. Welcome, Kevin.
Welcome, Kevin. Okay, so we're still ahead of schedule. So before we break and move to lunch, which, you know, actually we might end up being able to give ourselves a couple minutes for you to catch up on email and make phone calls and schmooze, which is not a bad thing, I want to go back to the subcommittee issue because I want to just flesh out a little bit more what I said about the subcommittee work really being the centerpiece of this meeting today. We expect a lot from the subcommittees and from the members and chairs of the subcommittees. And what we want to do really today is to get the subcommittees starting to think about what tasks can be completed within a year. That's crucial. Obviously, we don't want to lose a single day to move forward. But also, what will produce some kind of defined, demonstrable, deliverable, or end product. For example, proposed standards or templates, recommended procedures. that stuff that even if it can't be completed within a year, it can be started within the year and can be crucial. So in a sense, what we're asking the subcommittees to do is to focus a good bit today not only on the big picture arc of the whole life of the task force, but the short term and the medium term. What do you think needs to be at the very top of our priority for what is left of this year, and what is it that is in that medium term agenda that you want to start this year? Why are we doing it this way? Well, in part, it's the structure of the Language Access Plan, which, as you'll recall, allows us to have some flexibility regarding phasing, right? The plan starts by identifying these 47 recommendations that are in phase one. That's the judgment of the plan and its drafters about what we can do first. We want to now leverage the wisdom of the subcommittees to say, okay, we're taking that on, but we're also tweaking that where necessary, pulling some things in if necessary from phase two, recognizing that even among the bucket of phase one, we want to put some stuff at the very top of the list. And that's sort of why we gave the subcommittees a good amount of time today to really think this through and work through it and identify where the agreement is, where some of the divergence is. And then moving forward, after all that discussion, we want to have the subcommittees come back and share with the entire task force what that discussion is looking like, what their progress is likely to be, what their priorities, and what draft recommendations they are in particular prioritizing, what guidelines they want to start working on, and so on. I do want to underscore that reflects something important about the task force, which is the subcommittees are the place where a lot of the key discussion will happen around key issue areas. The responsibility will be there. But all of us in the task force will weigh in on these different subject matters. That is to say that even though the subcommittee on technology is going to play a pivotal role, we will get to discuss, we will get to think about this, we will get to decide together. That's crucial to us as well. So when we reconvene at 3 o'clock in this very place, after we have the breakout sessions, each subcommittee is going to give that report back. We've given you 15 minutes. If it turns out that that's not enough, you can go to 16 minutes. That's not enough, we'll just cut you off. But certainly if you don't need the whole time, sometimes it's a little more straightforward than that. That's fine as well. There will no doubt be some complexity, some things we haven't thought about that will come to the fore in your discussion. And so that's basically the plan for today. And at this time, I want to pause again to see if anybody has any questions. Yes.
Yes. My name is Jose Varela. I have a question with regard to the participation of the court executive officers. I think many of them across the state have a tremendous amount of knowledge. I spoke to several who have actually started doing a lot of signage. It's just part and parcel of the culture. In Santa Clara County, I spoke to David Yamasaki and just saw just the wealth of translation that they've already done within their courts. And I'm wondering whether or not there's a technological way to create a knowledge-gathering pool that all of us here could have access to and that the court executive officers could actually dump knowledge into. Because I think some of the things that we're being asked to do may assume that we have knowledge of what's going on at the court level now. And I think as a baseline, if it's possible to be able to gather that information, it would be great.
I think that's a terrific suggestion. And I encourage others of you to chime in with this kind of suggestion. But let me just underscore two things I like about what you've said. We'll say one is when I was talking about the budget, I didn't spend enough time also telling you that part of that process is going to be information gathering. It has to be, because otherwise we don't have a foundation on which to think about cost estimates. But that information gathering process, I like the idea of having it be a little bit more open and decentralized as well. In other words, could we create a wiki? Could we create some kind of technological resource or website where people could start to sort of list some of the best practices that are going on? I think that would be really interesting, and we'll get staff taking a look at how we can do that. Also, one other thing I just want to add to your point about court executives. Part of what we want to do in the subcommittee meetings, let me just underscore this again, is to have you talk not only about what your short-term and medium-term agenda is going to be, but also what folks you think might be good to pull in as advisors to the subcommittee, even beyond the purview of the task force. And then we'll think about exactly how to formalize that, but court executives should certainly be part of that list as well. I think I saw Judge Walsh.
Yes. I didn't put Jose up to asking that question, but I thank him for it. In fact,
there's a problem with putting the two of you together.
We're going to do well together, I can tell. In fact, we have such a site, which we created last year at the request of the Chief Justice, and it's called the Innovation Knowledge Center. It's on Serranus, and I could give you a business card for it if I brought it up. And we could easily create, it's an app store, basically. So we have apps on ADR, apps on community outreach, juvenile delinquency, and that's where we post the trial court's best practices, the full programs. Hit a button and you can contact the person who created that program in San Diego County. You can get all their materials. It's all on there. And we could easily, I'm committing staff here, but they're really good at this, they could easily create an icon for interpreters and begin to gather those, post them. We already have a template for doing it, and I think it's a terrific idea to add this particular icon.
Terrific. Thank you. Joanne Lee has also joined us, I think. Where's Joanne? There. Welcome, Joanne Lee. Any other comments or questions? Yes, Judge.
Dennis Hayashi. I have a question that's not quite related necessarily to what you've spoken about, but I was curious in the context of the work of the group, with respect to convening town halls or things like that to talk to people in the broader community about what we're doing as we go along this year, what do we envision in terms of doing those type of meetings or public input meetings in some way?
That's a great question. So I touched on this just a little bit, very generally, when I talked about how we don't just want the public comment at meetings like this one to be the be-all, end-all. We do expect to have some town halls. We have one already that we're thinking about, the time frame being roughly what?
September.
September, right? So and we're trying to figure out logistics, location, that sort of thing. If you have ideas, we'd love to hear those. But I guess the bigger opportunity for us, which we can think about as well, and we can tailor also potentially to the needs of the subcommittees for input, would be somewhat more informal meetings that could not necessarily be formal sessions of the task force where everybody would be expected to attend, but could include, you know, a convergence of a couple of task force members who are committed to going together with staff to listen and maybe to hear from some folks. And it could be even around particular issues like technology or like translation and signage and tools for courts. So that, I think, is an even better opportunity to supplement the other outreach strategies we've got. Anything you want to add, Judge Covarrubias, on that score?
Well, one thing I would indicate, those that provided public comment before the joint working group, we really found those very insightful and very helpful. So having that process, we can get into the community and get that input, was just tremendous. It would really help everyone really to focus in on the real issues that everyday people experience when they come in and have these challenges before them. And having a process to be able to expand into the community through ethnic media and the like, that's one thing we've discussed during our working groups. And it's challenging because to find a group where you can meet everyone and have them come in without expending the cost and make it open is going into that community to do that. So I'm sure that's an issue that we'll be addressing, those obstacles we'll be looking to see how we can reach the community in their form. So looking out to see where community groups may already exist in certain meetings and attending theirs, I've always found to be very efficient use, so they don't have to come to us. We go to them in their households in that, in other respects, so that they're more open to really express their needs, which is what we need.
It's very helpful. Other comments, questions at this point? Seeing none, Doug will briefly describe logistics for lunch. And do you think it's realistic to reconvene at noon for lunch, I think, or maybe?
Sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Maybe.
And I just want to also welcome Janet Hudak, who has just arrived.
Welcome.
Janet. Lunch is going to be as you go out of the boardroom, you turn right, then you go to the end of the hallway, and lunch will be in the lunchroom. And then, as Justice Cuellar mentioned, we'll work in our subcommittee groups, and then we'll reconvene in the boardroom at 3.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, and I'll see you in about 15 minutes.
No, I think we're fine. What room are we meeting in?